episode 80 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is April the 7th, 2012. My name is Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my fully prepared brother, James Furlough.
Did you just say episode 80?
Episode 80. That's right, right?
Wow.
I know.
Yeah, no, that's correct. That's a lot.
It is a lot. It's a crazy lot. But it's good, you know? It feels good.
Cool.
Feels like we're on a roll.
I like it. I was clean shaven just for the show.
I know, man. I was about to say it looks good, but nothing looks as good as facial hair.
I understand.
I shaved 2 Saturdays ago. Just completely shaved everything off. And everybody's like, why'd you shave? And I was like, you're tired of the beard? I was like, I'm not tired of the beard. I never get tired of the beard. But I have to tell you this. There's only one thing I like more than having a beard, and that's growing a beard. So, like the phoenix, it'll rise again. But anyways, yeah. So
I like it. All right.
This week, what are we going to do? This week, like every week, we're going to talk about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they're developing. And this is going to be a good week for it, because there's a lot of, like, you know, headbutting of different companies doing their different things. So before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure that he wants to throw out there so he doesn't get fired.
Yes, that's right. I work for HP, but I do not represent any of HP's opinions.
That's good. That's good, good, good. If you want to follow us throughout the week, feel free to do that. We're all over the internet. You can just Google Furlough Bros. You can also go to our Twitter accounts. My handle is at Matthew D. Furlough.
And I am at James Furlough.
Nice. You can go and find all the information that we post throughout the week at furloughbros.com. So if you want to get our Twitters, or you want to go to the Facebooks, or you want to go to the Google Plus, or you want to catch up on old episodes, or find articles from this week, or get downloads if those ever show up for some reason, those will all be linked at furloughbros.com for your convenience. So feel free to go there, email it to your friends, you know, just email everybody in your address book like it were spam. That works. About 10% of the people are going to click on the link, 5% are probably going to be actually interested, and then you can just be like, I'm sorry, it was a virus, I didn't do it on purpose, and it'll be awesome. Appreciate that.
We'll back it, it's okay. Because they'll come here and then realize what happened.
Exactly.
So you'll be off the
hook. So, this week, what happened this week?
There was a ton that happened this week.
I know. It was a good week. I've been excited about it all week.
I'm gonna co-op you.
Okay.
Just because I can, and then we'll do yours. We started off this week with it's not really a holiday per se.
True.
But it's a day that many tech companies love. And that is, of course, we are referring to Halloween. April Fool's, talking about April 1st.
We come up with the worst April Fool's jokes.
I know. I was doing it on the fly. Slash Gear came out with just their April Fool's roundup for this year, and so I just real quickly want to touch on what some of them were, which I thought was good. So Nokia, they're going to be coming out with a Lumia colored touchscreen microwave.
Nice.
Later this year. Yep. It should be good. It cooks at 5,000 watts. Which is nice because it'll cook everything mostly instantly, and it also has an integrated camera to share snaps of your food on Facebook.
Oh man, that actually, as ironic and stupid as that is, I'll bet there's value to that. I'll bet that's actually, I will bet within 20 years, your microwave will have cameras on it that you can post to your social media. I'll bet that cameras are just that omnipresent.
There you go. And I like their quote here. This said, more models, including a mini variant targeted towards people with small appetites and a 10-inch variant aimed at no one in particular, are also planned.
That's funny.
I liked it. Samsung is coming out with the new Smart Echo Tree. It's scented with S buds. It's kind of an over-the-air fragrance, which is cool. It also has the promise of doing a CO2 to O2 conversion, along with what they would call SEEDs, otherwise known as seeds, for smart sharing. They also say that you can climb them, and they'll come in a range of shades of green.
Yeah.
Nice. Google had, I think three of them, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
They introduced Google Nose.
Which was pretty funny.
Yeah.
The best part about that video.
Go ahead.
The best part about the video is the end when they go, you can just Google it in. You can just go to Google and Google Nose. And you're like, whoa, it's actually a really good tagline. That's a brilliant tagline. I wish this were a thing now because that's marketing genius right there. I thought it was. You guys put too much thought into it. But I
like how they said they're going to add stuff to their knowledge graph, and so they have expertly curated knowledge panels who pair up the images and descriptions with aromas.
Right.
There is kind of a Pandora kind of mixture of the tags for it. They also are coming out with Gmail Blue, which I liked. Their whole thing was how do we completely redesign and recreate something while keeping it exactly the same?
Yeah, that was definitely that one felt like it was a big jab at the classic, Apple, promo video where they're like, iPhone is the greatest thing that's ever happened ever and does not need to be changed in any way. But we needed to make it the bestest ever, and I thought it was a good one. It was well done.
Yeah, I agree. They also came out with they had multiples. They had one. It was a treasure one, which they made it sound like it was fun and games. And I was like, oh man, I wish this was real.
I know. Yeah. Why does it have to be all fun and games? Why can't we actually do this?
So the feature, if they turn Google Maps into have this treasure maps overlay, that in itself would be cool. But then they just took it to the next level where they were you will only work. Sometimes you literally have to do hover over mode and they show a person skydiving with the map. And then it shows the X where it pulls up.
Oh man.
Which is kind of funny. And then the other one, which I thought was hilarious.
Oh my gosh, this is definitely the best.
Yeah, it was, because I saw this on Sunday night when I was doing podcast stuff.
Oh yeah.
Because, we record everything on YouTube, and it was YouTube's ready to select a winner. Make sure you add yours to the list. I was
right.
Okay, I'm interested. Click. and that was where it popped up this message saying that, we've been collecting videos, and we think we finally have enough to select the best video. So we're shutting down the site.
Yeah.
We've got all these people together to help come up with the video, and then in 10 years or whatever it was, we'll relaunch with that video.
Yeah, and nothing else. I the best part about that is we're ready to select the winner, so we're shutting down YouTube. What?
Make sure yours is submitted.
Yeah.
I love 24 hours left.
and the best part about it is they did such a great job of making it all about the competition and the winners and just sort of the passing side consequence of, we're shutting down YouTube. Okay, you guys that was just an understanding, just so you remember that when we watch, there's the whole point. I don't know. It was really well done. Laughed at that one. And they had all the different memes going,
Right, exactly, which was I was just going to say. I like that they pulled in all the other videos on there. That was pretty hilarious. Twitter says that they have come up with a monetization plan. They're going to start charging for vowels. So from now on, it will be spelled TWTTR. And it's only going to be $5 a month if you want to include A, E, I, O, or U. But Y will remain free, which is nice. And then they show like some mock-ups of different tweets, which you can't even read them. Which is hilarious. Like they show, I think they show that's the Barack Obama one, where it's like firmer ears. Yeah, like, all right, yeah. 4 more years, love it. And then I like this one. IKEA has said that they have finally come up with a flat-packed lawnmower. And so basically it's a lawnmower, like IKEA furniture, and it looks like this puny little toy. And basically you just build it yourself. It comes in a box, and you got yourself a lawnmower, which is hilarious. Now, what they say also is that ThinkGeek came out with one. But ThinkGeeks are weird because they're like, A, you actually kind of want it, and then B, they actually are using that as a test bed for some crazy ideas. Like, for example, this one, it's a Play-Doh 3D printer.
I was going to say, this is not that crazy.
I know. You're like, it's $50, and you run from your iPad, and you create a 5-inch cubed 3D model of, you know, squishy dough. And like I said, they have used those try to gauge interest in some of their more offbeat products. So they're like, so that one actually might show up someday.
Yeah.
Because you're like, well, that's actually
it almost certainly
cool.
Will. The question will be, is it, you know, 50 years when Mattel finally gets around to it, or will be ThinkGeek in two? That's why that one's not that funny of a joke. It's because it's like, no, that's just an actual future product. We'll have 3D printers for kids, of course.
Yeah. Virgin Atlantic is coming out with the glass-bottomed airplane.
This one I had, like, mixed feelings about, because I was like, one, that would actually be pretty cool, and horrifying. Like, I'm not, I don't know. I could totally see this, but I could also see it being just, you know, a vomit rocket.
So what they said, though, is that they understand that, and so all they're going to do is start with domestic service in Scotland.
Okay.
You're like, still freaky. BMW is coming out with a royal baby-themed entrant in the shape of the postnatal royal automobile. Yeah, so they're coming out with a, what's that called? A stroller, essentially.
Yeah.
Which looks like a car. This one was hilarious. Who is it? Sony has come out with a line of pet audio tech, including these fetching cat cans. So your animals can listen to music. That also includes 4K TV for dogs and speakers for hamsters.
Oh, speakers for hamsters. That's actually not a terrible... I mean, once again, a lot of these ideas are like, you know, I don't know. I could totally see that as a product. I bet you could make a lot of money making headphones for your cat.
I know, which is kind of scary as well.
I know. But, like, you know, but I mean, you could, that's the sort of, like, infomercial that makes itself. Like, does your cat get bored when you're not home? Does your cat like music? Are you like, do you want, like, we like, and you have some sort of, like, a Wi-Fi, like, based, like, headphone that, like, straps onto your cat's head and plays, like, soothing cat sounds for the, and you just, like, and for 7 simple payments of $10 a month, you can get these amazing headphones for your cat. I could totally see people drop $70 on some ridiculous
thing. Dude, and I'll be honest, like their little poster thing, it looks legit. Yeah. It looks good. You know, you can tell that they took the time to Photoshop the cat in enough that it looked good. Even their hashtag for Twitter, tech for pets. Like, yeah, it sounds like it would be a real hashtag. And then I like in the very small print, it says no animals were harmed in the testing of in the testing or production of these products. Yes. And then The Guardian, which is a UK newspaper, they're playing off of the Google Glasses. So they've got the Guardian goggles. It's a set of wearable displays that can call up the publication's reviews and columns depending on where you're looking. And since it's known for its liberal slant, The Guardian promises to blank out right-wing commentary from rival papers and warn shoppers if their purchases aren't ethically sound.
Well, okay, so that's, I mean, that's, okay, once again, I could totally see that in the future, where, like, that's actually, like, that's, like, an interesting idea for an app. I mean, obviously, you know, Google Glasses is designed to be, it's designed to put your content between, like, the real world and you, but, like, you could, I could totally see a world where you have, like, full-on glasses or something, and, like, you can just black out certain areas. Like, if you don't want to, like, see some person or certain words for your kids, like, I don't want my kids to hear, see curse words or blank out text. I mean, as ridiculous as that sounds, I'll bet that comes up sometime in the future. The idea of being able to censor your world through Google, you know, or heads-up displays. That's got a dystopian book written all over it, slash a dictatorial regime. But interesting.
Yeah, wow. So those are some of the better ones from this year. There you go.
That's April awesome. Fools. I still think the my favorite was the Google shutting down YouTube.
Yeah, that was pretty goofy.
It was a great video. It had a lot of laughs. It's just the whole premise is that's awesome.
Yeah, so, you can tell that they. I mean, well, with a lot of them, they spend time on them, but that one.
Google spends
time to produce it and think it through, and
Google spends way too much time on that stuff.
Celebs. I know, which tells you something, right?
Well, it's their marketing team that spends all the time, but still, that's what they're paid to do, is to get us to talk about their products.
Good job.
Yeah, congratulations. So this was not an April Fool's joke. This is just cool. Tesla expects its first profits this quarter, coming into whatever. I have no idea what quarter we're coming into. If it's not Christmas, I don't know what quarter it is.
Q2.
Okay. So. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people at first read this as, oh, well, they're going to be, you know, they're profitable. It's not technically true yet, but they're announcing that they expect to be. Linked to the wrong article.
I was going to say, I have no clue what you linked to, but that's okay.
Oh, man, it's like it's last week again. But, yeah, I'll just give you the... I'll give you the lowdown. I don't know. There's not much more to it than that. They're expecting to be profitable, which is exciting for me because, you know, I'm a big fan of Elon Musk, the CEO. I think that this is it's a cool product. I think I read a couple of interesting articles this week, evidently I didn't link to, about where they were talking about, you know, competitive electric car companies and really like what's been the difference that made the difference for Tesla. And the big thing that everybody comes back to is that Tesla really has invested in their own drivetrain and their own battery technology. And they started focusing on what goes on inside the car before they focused on how the car looks, whereas a lot of other the other real big players in the market for electric cars have said there's good drivetrain technology out there, there's good battery technology out there, we'll buy that off the shelf, we'll focus on how it looks, we'll sell a sexy looking car, and we'll sell it for a lot less. And it'll work. But the problem is that the performance isn't enough to actually get you over that hump. Whereas Tesla's really, you know, they've gotten over that performance. They're close enough to the lowest bar performance wise that it's just people are able to justify the cost for their mid range expensive car. So you're no longer talking about the rich and the. I think it's like $50,000. Oh my gosh. This one is. But it's not the Tesla Roadster, you know, and the thing is that, man, they're so good because it's both of their cars, the Tesla Roadster and the Model S are such good looking cars. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You probably haven't gotten to see the Tesla S up close. Have you?
No, just videos.
Well, yeah, but Well, so Elon Musk has talked about it. It's interesting. He had a he did this talk years and years ago that kind of got redug up because he was talking about the fact that he wanted to make his roadmap for Tesla was we're going to make a super high end car. And we're going to sell that, and we don't expect to sell a lot. And then we're going to make a mid-range car. It's going to be expensive, but it will be more affordable, and we hope to expand it.
How much is the Roadster again?
It's like $100K. It's a luxury sports car is what it is. And
it's almost like that was just an experimental prototype that they figured, why not? Let's sell a couple hundred and recoup our costs.
Well, that was the point. I mean, that was the thing. It's not even – I think at that point it wasn't even about recouping costs. It was about the only way to really get our mind share to get people thinking about it is to have them on the road. It was an advertising campaign. That entire thing was we're going to work on the drivetrain, and then the roadsters were – because they used the – they literally buy the bodies from the Lotus bodies – you can't tell the difference between a Roadster and a Lotus if you don't see the name on the cars. But the Lotus is a rare enough car that it's still very, it's very noticeable when you see one on the road. And the Model S, once again, I mean, it looks like a four-door sedan, but it's just got, it just looks sleek. It looks good. And so there's a much more about this as the mindshare, but he very clearly stated that the roadmap was to finally make an affordable consumer car, to make a car that's more in your $25,000 price range, something that families can, they're expensive, but families can justify affording them. And so all expectations is that what comes next.
Not his family.
Yeah, seriously. And all expectation is that is what comes next in this roadmap, but it's really exciting that already they're, you don't have to basically make do with just having Elon Musk be really rich in order to make it work.
That is nice. Yeah,
they're gonna turn a profit, which is pretty cool. And it's cool. I'm excited about it. But we'll see. I'm looking forward to seeing more of what comes out of that company. And I love seeing their cars on the roads because they're good looking cars. It's funny. Mm-hmm. I care. I think the environmental aspect of it is interesting, but that's not why I get excited about these cars at all. It's just because it's brilliant engineering and they look great. They're just very cool cars. it's the motorhead guy inside of me that's like, oh, these are awesome. so they're, I don't know. It's cool. I'm stoked. But yeah. So this is a
moment of silence.
I know, yeah.
Moment
dun,
of silence.
Dun 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 dun.
Dun, for dun, LucasArts.
Dun, 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 dun. Wait, now, wait. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't really do the... I did the Death March.
That's
the
okay.
Imperial Death March? Oh, I don't know. Anyways, yeah, LucasArts.
Yeah, so 153, 57 now, probably days ago, Disney bought LucasArts, and we all got excited for Star Wars.
That was 157 days ago? Holy cow.
Yeah. But one of the other things that happened with that is Disney is shutting down LucasArts and canceling all development of their games.
Yeah.
So, which apparently the only one that really mattered was Star Wars 1313, knew nothing about.
It wasn't the only one that matters. There was another one that they were developing. It was Star Wars 1313 was a big one, and then there was evidently it wasn't the only one that matters.
They did say that some of the development will continue in another studio, or they'll just license it out. They'll do what Disney does, right? Which is license out the rights of their properties to other developers to make games for them.
So the thought is that Star Wars 1313 is dead. I mean, it's they don't think anybody will. They don't think anybody's gonna want the property. They think that they.
Oh no! I was speaking more generally. The Star Wars name,
right?
Not
well. What's interesting about this is
these games.
The initial response that I had was, LucasArts, you can't do that. LucasArts is like this, you know, it's just, you know, it's a legend. It's got history, you know, and you get kind of all bent out of shape when you realize that they're, like, you know, dismantling this, like, one of the early innovators in the, you know, in the video game industry, and, you know, creators of such classics as, you know, your Dark Forces, your X-Wings, your Rebel Assaults, and games like that. But the reality of it is that in the last, like, 10 and like last 10 years, there's only been like two giant hits that have come out of the Star Wars universe, and that's Star Wars Battlefront and Knights of the Old Republic. And even The Force Unleashed was kind of a tempered hit. But the thing is that Knights of the Old Republic and Battlefront were actually developed by other studios that had licensed the title from
Lucas. Interesting.
Right. So of the three biggest games, only the one that was the least successful was actually made in-house. Everything else was made out of house. And the thing is that LucasArts used to be more than just Star Wars video games. LucasArts used to be a major video game developer that was building all sorts of creative, interesting, different IP. And that just had stopped over the years. Now they just became we make Star Wars video games, and we don't even make the best Star Wars video games. So it's like, it's funny. I was just not really very cognizant of the fact that that was what was going on with LucasArts, because I didn't realize that Battlefront and Knights of the Old Republic were made by different video games. But it's like, when you actually see, like, okay, who made what and when, you realize, oh, that's right. That I don't make games that people like. So, yeah, I can see why.
Yeah, no, it totally makes sense. It's purely just nostalgia that you're like, ah, see them go by. So here's what you can do. Two of my, like, I actually think these were like some of the first computer games that I played. They were Day of the Tentacle and Full Throttle, which are classically awesome. They're the, I think they're the same vein as the Monkey Island games, where you click around, then you can do things, like you can push, you can grab, you can pick up, you can talk to people, and you have essentially an inventory of things that you can then use, and the object is to kind of work your way through whatever the problem is. And Day of the Tentacle, the world gets taken over by tentacles, and there's time travel.
Tentacles. Yeah. Tentacles.
Yeah. And then in Full Throttle, you're the leader of a biker gang, and you get beat up, and you just got to try to figure out, like, what's going on with this, you know, when you finally wake up.
I have always thought that Full Throttle would make a fantastic movie.
It would be good. I would agree with that. It's just it's a fun game too. So here's the deal.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. This is for Furlough Bros special only, okay? This was a while ago, man. I don't actually remember when I did it, and I just had to re-upload it. But a while ago, I got the CDs back from you from home. And yes. In an attempt to play them on my computer, I learned that I could not.
Yeah.
And so I
turns out they were made for DOS.
Yeah. So I started doing some internet research. And what I found out was that you don't actually have to use the CDs to play them, which is awesome. And so what I have done is I actually zipped those two games and put them onto my server, and then gave instructions on how to get them to play, because you can use pretty much a virtual machine to play them. And so if you go to furlough.net/share, it'll automatically forward you to old school LucasArts games, and it has those two. And don't do it right now, because I'm I'm re-uploading the files, but they'll be up by the time this podcast is.
And so that people don't have to re-listen to this part over and over again, they can just go to furloughbros.com, correct? And the link will be there.
Yeah. I'll add the link to furloughbros.com, and then it'll be furlough.net/share, and you'll be able to just follow the instructions. And I just republished the page that I put up a while ago, because I think once I discovered it, I shared it with a bunch of friends. I'm like, dude, here's how you do this.
It's true. I think I have it on this computer. I could play right now.
You could. So with no CD, which is pretty awesome. So that's one way that you can relive the glory days of LucasArts films, video games. And I'm pretty sure that works with all their games. And I can't remember. I might have just gone into the Explorer and taken the files off of the CD.
Yeah.
I don't think I found it online anywhere. I think I just grabbed them literally off the CD.
What are you going to say? Yeah. Back in the day when protecting your games was really a big thing, you know, it's pretty easy to, because I was going to say, you're not even mounting the disc, you're just up and playing it. That's very cool. I'm excited about that.
So you will have to check it out. Once it's done uploading, which, like I said, by the time you, dear listener, hear this, it will be done. It'll be cool. Up there. So just go to furloughbros.com, find the link that'll say something like play dot and full throttle. Dot is day of the tentacle. You'll see it. So anyways, sad news. There it is.
Right. Well, and speaking also, of dead technology or dying technology, we got to have another moment of silence this time for WebKit.
Yeah, in a blink, it's gone.
Oh, nice. That's a good pun. So WebKit, for those of you that, like, we talk about this every once in a while, this is a cool little transitionary piece of technology. Turns out it's transitionary. We thought it was like a fundamental underpinning of the internet, but evidently not. WebKit was this, Apple started to develop a new engine for their browser, and this engine was designed to render HTML5, which was kind of a big deal since HTML5 didn't exist as an agreed upon standard yet. So they're just kind of making it up as they went. And in order to at some point they realized that in order to kind of get everybody else on the bandwagon, they of the standards that they were pushing, because WebKit would eventually go on to become the underpinnings of Safari for your mobile browser, Safari for your desktop browser, and they wanted everybody to get on board with it. So what they did was they came up with this clever idea. Look, we'll publish this engine as an open source project. We'll let anybody use it as that wants it, submit to it, and we'll manage it for a bit, and then other companies can get in on it. And when they launched the project, Google took some liking to it. They thought it was pretty cool. So Google eventually incorporated that and used WebKit as the underpinnings of, or as the engine for Chrome. And right. Eventually Mozilla got on board too, with Firefox, and Opera was had just announced a couple weeks ago that they were going to adopt WebKit as their engine. And Apple at some point decided to actually move away from it because they're rogues. They hate to play nice with anybody.
Really? Did they?
So, I knew that. I was vaguely aware of it. I can't remember what they call their engine. It's not important. But they moved away from it. But it's essentially the same engine. And what they did was they used a term that's called forking it, where you essentially say, we are going to, at this point, we're going to start with WebKit, and we're going to move in another direction. And this new direction is our own code, but it's based historically on WebKit. And at that point, Google took over control of WebKit, and WebKit, you know, continued to become the main engine of Chrome. But the problem is that when you've got a bunch of different companies, often of a lot of importance and size, using the same...
A lot of importance and size.
using the same code, and you're all supposed to be on the same, like, rev of it, so you're all working together, that oftentimes meant that Google was putting in huge amount of work to make the code work and adding stuff that would generate bugs and problems that it had to go in and fix in order to get stuff to work on their browser as well as Firefox. And it was just, it was crazy because it was like, you know, they're spending all this time trying to keep it open for other people and so that everybody was working on the same piece of technology when really the original idea was you'd have all your main browsers would be running on the same thing. And the goal was WebKit would become the engine and you'd kind of have these different skins for IE, for Safari, for Chrome, for Firefox. And then you do like, you'd have your own JavaScript engine and you'd have your own this engine, but how it actually rendered HTML5 and CSS would all be the same. But Microsoft has no intention of moving over. Apple already forked it for their own purposes. So Google decided to do the same. Man, pretty much, is going to end development on WebKit. Blink is the name of the new engine. And it's going to be literally day one, it starts as WebKit. And they're basically just going to cut out a bunch of junk that they don't need. It is open source, so other companies can use it, but it won't be open collaboration. You'll have to be they have requirements.
It's open source, like Android is open source.
Exactly. So Opera, who just announced they're moving over to WebKit, like 2 days after Google made their announcement, were like, so we're going over to Blink instead. Nice. Like, I don't even know what it is yet. But Google has given permission for their developers to say, hey, you can whatever you're adding to Blink, since that's open source, you can move that on over to WebKit too. So you can just keep on developing for WebKit if you want. Which everyone's like, yeah, these engineers that are working 40 hours a week on Blink are gonna want to spend 5 minutes moving code into WebKit as well, much less the hours that it would take to keep them in parity. So they're like, this is it for WebKit. That was fun and all, but end of a moment. Kind of a cool moment in collaboration. It was a great job on Apple's part to get the entire industry off of, and really and truly what it was, and in my opinion, was it was a big move to get us off of what was that one piece of technology? I can't remember what it's called anymore. Flash. That's what it was.
Okay. You know,
basically, figure out how to do video in the on the browser. And oh man, Steve Jobs was smart. It's crazy. It's crazy how good he was at that sort of stuff. You know. He decided he didn't want to use Flash, so they came up with this giant scheme, and like 5 years later, now that they've done what they wanted to do, it's going away. Oh, yeah, we don't need that anymore. Oh, that's clever.
We're good. Well, I mean, it's still there. If anything, it's just taking on a new name.
Yeah.
Is one way to think about it.
Well, yeah, but the only reason why what WebKit was it was a project that everybody could collaborate on and everybody could use. So it was truly an open source engine. And I think, which gave a lot of encouragement to smaller companies like Opera, ironically, since they never, you know, they took forever to get to move to it. Whereas now it's basically Google's browser. Yeah, you can use it, but if you don't play nice with what Google is doing, you can't do your own thing in your own unique way, which is, it's different, but it's, you know, it is what it is. I can't, you know, c'est la vie, as they say in France.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. So what is this ISP advertisement thing?
Yeah, so this is kind of crazy. There was this dude who was real brief story. There's this dude, he was in a master's program working on getting his in computer science, and he went to his parents' house and opened up his MacBook Pro, went to check out the Apple Store, and there was an ad on the Apple Store, this big, obnoxious H&R Block ad. And he was like,
Apple's
what the heck
new
is this?
Monetization?
Yeah, exactly.
Is that what they get into?
Yeah, and he was like, what the heck is this? It's like super ugly. And so he immediately assumes that he got spyware on or adware on his computer somehow. He's like, shoot.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm this big time, I think I'm the coolest guy. I know everything about computers and I got a virus. So he decided to jump on over to his parents' computer who were using Windows 7. And Windows 7, he goes to Bing, and Bing has got an AT&T ad the exact same size sitting on it. And he's like, what the heck? So he opens up his Android phone, goes to some other website. I think he goes to Yahoo, and Yahoo's got this same exact ad, same exact stuff. And he goes, okay, it is. He goes, you know, maybe we're all dumb enough to get viruses on one of our computers. He goes, but the idea of getting the same a virus that affects all these web pages the same ways on three different operating systems as different as Android.
That's pretty impressive.
And he goes, so it's probably not a virus. So he immediately jumps the idea of like in his brain, this is so funny. He's like, dude, somebody hacked our router and I have a virus on the router. And he's like at his parents' house. And this is such a computer science thing, like way to look at the world. Cause it's like, you know, it's like crazy. The idea of, or it's a dumb idea. It's like, if you're like right in the middle of like computer technology, you're like, somebody says I got a virus on my router. You're like, that's stupid. Like, that's not even possible. That doesn't make any sense. But, and it's like, that's the sort of thing that like some complete tech neophyte would come up with, like, it's probably a virus on your router. Until you get like smart enough to think about, how would I create a really clever virus? I know what I'll do. I'll put a virus on routers. And like, it's like, so it's like a legitimate concern for him. So he's like trying to figure out like where this extra code is coming from. Cause he's looking at it, and what he realizes is it's a little chunk of Java that's popping into the websites. So he figures that it's just in that his router is just injecting everything. And what he does is he on his Android phone, he turns off the Wi-Fi and it goes away. So he goes, well, obviously it's coming from the network. So he starts to trace this stuff to make sure it's coming from the router. And all of a sudden he realizes that, that the information is actually, it's actually coming from before the router. I'm not exactly clear how he figured this out, but he realized that it was popping through some other service. And so basically what's going on, the end conclusion was CMA Communications is the ISP. And basically what they're doing is when you send a request, the request, you know, they go, I want to go to target.com. Boom, it hits CMA. They go, okay, they give you the IP address with all the HTML. And as the HTML is coming back to you, they pass it all through a third-party server who just tacks on that little piece of code at the very bottom. And then it gets back to your home with that little piece of code that adds the ads. And so basically it's a monetization plan for CMA Communications. They can add ads to everything. And he was like horrified by this because he's like, you know, what the heck? You can't inject code into my web pages. Like that would be like, okay, I'm going to use Brown in order to, get my, mail from, I'm sending mail somewhere and they like open up your package and like add ads into the package and close the package back up. Like, this is terrible. And not to mention the fact that
maybe it would be like you're watching a television program on Comcast and they interrupt it with a commercial.
Exactly. That'd be exactly how infuriating it would be. But they're embedding all this stuff, and you're like,
or as if there were like commercials on Hulu.
Right.
You know?
Oh my goodness.
Right.
See, that is actually frustrating. But it's on one hand, it's kind of clever. On one hand, it's kind of clever way of doing it, adding commercials to it. On the other hand, it's like obscene.
I remember the days when commercials were only 15 and 30 seconds long.
On Hulu?
Oh, those were the good days.
Yeah.
Yep. On Hulu.
See, I don't use Hulu.
And they couldn't
get
around the ad block either, so it was just a blank screen for 15 and 30 seconds.
That was the best.
I remember those days. Those were the good days. And now it's like 120 seconds of real commercials.
Right. Yeah. So this guy,
I don't even know how long like regular TV is, but I feel like it's getting there.
Yeah, I think it is 102 minutes. That sounds about right. But this is I don't know. This is interesting. This is an interesting new tax system. And the other thing you brought up is like, he goes, you know, you can like, let's say you go to H&R Block.com to file your taxes. You know, CMA or your different providers, they know that you're going to H&R Block. They could totally make contracts with TurboTax so that as you go to H&R, it pops up an ad on H&R Block. Saying, why not try TurboTax? Will you charge 10% less?
This is a massive breach of privacy.
Yeah, that's kind of what everybody's talking about. Like, this is, like, horrifying, you know, privacy-wise, especially since you didn't sign up for this. You know, it just is happening now. But it's
well,
like,
I mean,
this is
probably did technically check a box somewhere, but you had no clue.
Right, that's a good point. You signed up for the service, but the other thing they're talking about is like, what happens if you go to like, let's say you go to what's a good example? Somebody that has you know products that they're advertising, but you know once you like all right now all they're doing is injecting this little piece of code. But why can't they go in and say like, let's say you're on Target.com and you want to buy pants and Levi or let's because they don't sell Levi's at Target. So you're at Macy's.com and you want to buy some Levi khakis and Dockers doesn't think that's cool. This is a terrible example too because Levi owns Dockers.
Owns Dockers.
Yeah. the idea being that a competitive
yeah,
pants
just
company
go with the idea.
Could go with one of these companies and say, anytime somebody goes to Macy's.com, I want you to remove all references to Levi's and just put links to our pants instead. You know, and all of a sudden,
or it's like Target.com forwards to Walmart.
Exactly. It's like, it's, I mean, I don't think nobody's that courageous yet, but why not? As an ISP, why, like, what agreements do you have that you're going to send me to the
just
right?
404 Air, try these other retailers.
Right, exactly. Oh, yeah. Google.com is down right now. Maybe you should try Bing. You know, but it's like, this goes back to that whole idea of, like, you know, of websites that are, you know, this whole idea you know, that has been pitched a couple of times where you'd have different, you know, different packages will allow you to go to different parts of the internet as though it were cable packages. But, you know, from an ad perspective, why can't companies do that? What's stopping them? What's, you know, other than this sort of unspoken agreement that when you type in Google.com, it'll bring up Google.com, or when you go to Target/Dockers, it'll send you to the Dockers page at Target. Once again, a bad example since they don't sell Dockers. But you know, why don't ISPs get into this game?
I think they want to. I think there's some massive, massive privacy concerns that I think will actually erode over time. You know, Facebook would love to have that kind of data too, And I mean, and you could see something like that, right? Where they totally team up with, it could be like Facebook, and Facebook be the weird one to do it, where, you know, they're just tracking everything. And if you as a consumer or a user, you know, opt in to share that information, okay, cool, no big deal. But this is clearly not opting in. I mean, you know, this guy, he didn't opt in to ask for this. Parents, I guess, Charlie technically did. I just, you know, and I suppose if all it is a random ad that, you know, and all they're doing is tracking clicks, I don't know, man.
Yeah, this whole thing is a fascinating, like, new wrinkle in this whole debate. Because, I mean, this isn't going to make...
web developers aren't super pumped about that either.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It's like
they
Apple...
get a say in the page.
Apple is, you know, and it's funny, all the recommendations that people have made is, you know who we need to complain is you need to complain to Apple. You need to go to Apple and say, look, whenever I go to your website, somebody else is injecting ads onto your webpage. Because Apple has the money and finances to and the lawyers to say, maybe you should stop messing with our code as it passes to our consumers. But, you know, smaller web pages, I could see stuff like where, you know, our page would have ads added to it, and we don't have any ads because we like you people and we think ads are ugly and we haven't figured out how to make a lot of money off of it yet. But trust me, as soon as we do, we'll have ads. but it's, you know, at this point we don't have any ads, and I'm sure if he were to go to our webpage from his parents' house, it'd show up with ads all of a sudden, and you sit there and you go, like, you just shrug your shoulders and I don't know. It's frustrating as a developer, as an ad, because, you know, especially since companies like Google is an ad company, Facebook is an ad company, like they can't be pumped about this idea, you know. Especially the idea of this so far is just, you know, it's not editing code yet, except they are placing their ad on top of everything else. Wow. It floats on top of everything else. You know, it is your forwardmost element.
Interesting question, right? Is that editing code when it changes what you see? I mean, that sure sounds like it to me. Yeah, sure. Yeah. The text may not be changed, but the intent is definitely changed.
Right, and you could.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. I bet that there are tons. I don't know. There's probably tons of families out there and households that have this and don't know any better. And man, I don't know. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be signing up for them anytime soon.
Yeah.
Not to mention it slows my browser down. Come on.
Yeah, it's messed up. That's the worst part. But I don't know.
And it sounds like AdBlock doesn't work, because maybe it does.
I think AdBlock would work. I think AdBlock would work because it's just Java.
Interesting.
And AdBlock works post receiving the HTML. It scrubs the HTML once it gets to you. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know. Cool. Let's talk about some world-changing phones.
Oh, yeah. So this week, oh, man, this is a big week. This was a big – oh, no. Was that last week? When did the cell phone turn old?
I don't know.
It was the 30 years old. It was April 3rd, 1973, which was Wednesday. Oh, baby. So the cell phone, turned old, 30, older than me.
Good old Motorola,
Yeah, and it all started with the Motorola you guys got to check this out. So this is an interesting article. This is actually a really fascinating article because they said these are the 12 cell phones that changed our world forever. And so it starts out with the Motorola Dynex 8000X, which was the first cell phone ever made, and it definitely changed stuff because
it's that classic brick where it's got the 9 key on top. And this was a cell phone, not a car phone, correct?
Right, right. Correct.
This is like the Zach Morris phone right here.
Right. Actually, yeah, it's exactly. And they were wicked expensive early on, but they were, you know, cell phones, and they worked in tiny mm-hmm. little areas mm-hmm. because, and it pioneered the idea of the cellular network. And
that is so awesome.
I know. So that obviously is a phone that changed how we use cell phones since it invented them. The next came up the Motorola Micro TAC, which was 1989. It was a flip phone factor. It was like the first one.
I feel like our mom had a version of this.
Me too, but I don't really remember. I feel like our family has had one for sure, though. It was a mere 12.3 ounces. For the sake of comparison, the Galaxy Note 2 is just shy of 6 inches long and 6.4 ounces, so it was still very heavy.
Wow!
But it had a lot of amazing features, including security codes, currency calculators, hand-free operation, and perhaps most conveniently, a phone book to store names and numbers. It was the beginning of the end of having to actually remember anyone's numbers. So that was kind of a big deal because it started to use more of the microprocessors. It wasn't just a walkie-talkie with a code for your dialing specific phone numbers. Next came up the Nokia 320 in 1990. This is one of the first big Nokia phones.
Like this.
Yes, I believe you did. This was that, like, the classic Nokia brick. This was the thing that, like, this was a huge selling phone worldwide, and it was, for a lot of people, it was their first cell phone. It added a lot of cool features, but it was the, and they call it, yeah, they call it the gateway drug to phones. And then they move on to the Sony Ericsson.
I would have had Snake on it for the first time.
I know. Oh. I remember playing Snake on that all the time. Game. All the time.
And you thought Angry Birds was silly.
yeah, seriously. Sony Ericsson T68i in 2002. This is the bridge phone, it's the bridge between dumb phones and smartphones. Could be argued that the most awesome cell phone ever. It had Bluetooth, two-way MMS, simple WAP browsing and email, and a colored screen. So this was like your first super early version of what would be, you know, where you're moving away from just the cell phone with the ability to do things that kind of implement the cell phone to really a wider device that's capable of different forms of communication. Then there's the Danger Hip Hop Sidekick, which this is basically, really? I don't even remember people having it, but they describe it as, this is basically the BlackBerry for kids. It had a full QWERTY keyboard. It had a 2.6-inch screen that just seemed huge at the time, color. But it was kind of your early smartphone-esque phones. And it was more feature-rich in its, you know, actual color screen compared to the BlackBerries. But, of course, the BlackBerry was a pretty big deal as your first, like, major stalwart smartphone. And that was in 2003. Yeah. The BlackBerry 6210 came out. And this is the BlackBerry that I think everybody recognizes as the CrackBerry. This is the one that really, you know, made a difference. Then you get the Trio 600 in 2003.
I wanted one of these.
I know you did.
And I almost bought one. Almost.
This is the
and
one that really
else came out with a phone.
Yeah, I know.
Which had better be on this list.
Oh, yeah, it is. So Palm, obviously, this is when they made the transition from the PDA to the phone. And it was kind of a big deal because it was basically a phone with a PDA. And so, and texting and internet. So this is like your modern form factor of smartphones pre 2007. And it really set the high bar for what smartphones
could be. They sold that one for a ton of years.
Tons of years.
2.5-inch screen. Woohoo!
Oh, it's big. And then a year later, the Motorola Razr came out in 2004, which is really the very end of the idea of smaller.
Did you have
lighter.
That one?
I did. I had like three of them. They all broke. And
that one was a very popular phone.
oh, crazy popular, sold an unbelievable amount. I think it was one of your, I don't know, the big thing here was how small it was, but it was, they describe it as this is the last dumb phone that truly mattered, which I think is why, only reason to think it's important. And they come to the Motorola Roker, which it could play iTunes, was its big innovation. It could work with iTunes. It could only play 100 songs, but it was a big deal because you're now moving into this, like, you're coming more and more into the idea of one step further away from it just being a phone. After that, you get the Nokia N95 in 2007, which I don't even know how this one made it onto, well, because it had a GPS, turn-by-turn navigation, 5 megapixel camera, short video, a radio tuner. It had a bunch of different features, but nobody has any idea what it was, because a little bit later in 2007, same year, Steve Jobs walked on stage and talked about a new web browser, telephone, and text messaging machine that he was developing and called it the iPhone.
That's a great intro. This is the phone that changed everything.
Yeah. It basically took all this innovation and put it into a package that was, like, incredible. Oh, my goodness. And then the last phone they come up with is the HTC Dream, which is really the first Android phone that showed what Android could be by comparison to the iPhone, and it makes sense that you would kind of add that into the list as they are selling that. As Android is outselling iPhones.
I don't know. I would have chosen that Android device per se, but
okay. Well, I understand why they picked it though, because it was the first one that wasn't a complete, dud of an operating system. And so I thought that was an interesting article talking about kind of how the innovation works. But one of the things that article completely ignores is the idea that cell phones have changed how the world works in a very appreciable way. And so that article was brought to you by Wired, and BGR came back with an article that just tears that Wired article apart. They're basically really? Like, oh yeah, it's great. And they're basically just raging about the fact that this is ridiculous. Number one, a bunch of these phones barely sold any phones. Like, yeah, sure, they had new features that people were excited about, but you can't just talk about, like, phones as, what new feature that it brought along and who got there first and how did it change things. Like, you really need to look at the overall impact of these phones. And they're talking about how Nokia has, like, 5 of their phones are the best-selling phones out that have ever been sold. And they didn't even pick the Nokia 320, which is the brick that everybody has, is not the best-selling Nokia phone ever. It's just the one that Americans had. They ragged on the Razr because it was just an evolutionary dead end. Like, well, Ward kind of pointed that out. they pointed out that the Sidekick and the Trail are each as influential as Nokia in the mobile phone history, since each of them given one slot out of 12. Yeah, so it's like, which are like, what the heck? The Nokia is like, this is obviously, this article is written from the bigger perspective of, like, how did this affect the world? And which is actually a really big conversation, because you think about it, it's like, in America, we have a completely different communication system than rural China, India, Africa. And so cell phones in those parts of the world have radically changed societies, because it essentially allowed them to catch up with communications innovations of the last century in a matter of a few decades. Whereas it took us centuries to lay all the fiber optics and all the support telephone wires to do all of this, they build one fiber optic cable to one cell phone tower, and then they build a couple of repeaters all around, and then boom, everybody's got telephone service and internet connectivity. What the heck? It's like, it's incredible. And Nokia really has been incredibly influential in allowing that to happen. And one of the things they talk about, this one just to pick just one example of a truly revolutionary model that reshaped the industry, let's look at the Nokia 1100. I was looking for the word, couldn't find it. This phone debuted in 2003 and went on to sell more than 200 million units. It was a landmark model because it packed a remarkable combination of functionality into a 93-gram phone that cost around $80. The 1100 featured 400 hours of standby time despite its tiny size, a huge important factor for households with spotty access to electricity. It offered advanced messaging features, ringtone composition, and games. This was a device that helped turn the mobile phone into the most important consumer electronic product in the world by making it affordable, extremely durable, and useful beyond voice calls. And so they basically get into like how, you know, the cell phones have changed the world in radically more, you know, and in some might argue more radically than computers have because they've affected more people. You know, some would argue that cell phones are just little computers, but, but I don't know. It was an interesting juxtaposition of the two of, because one is focused oftentimes what we tend to focus on or tech people tend to focus on is like, oh, these are the cool innovations that have come out. And you forget about the actual impact that this has on people's lives and families and entire societies and how it changes the world. You know, these are the phones that have allowed the Arab Spring to happen. You know, these are the phones that have allowed, you know, India to become a world economic powerhouse because, you know, communication and technology is incredibly of an incredible fundamental, you know, keystone to the whole game. And they've allowed them to accelerate into the future by not requiring wires. Pretty cool. Thought it was a fascinating couple of articles.
But. Yeah, definitely. They're really just two different ways of defining change, but I understand.
One is better than the other, wired, James.
Wired is referring to features, and you know, BGR is talking about culture,
yeah,
and society. But you know, whatever.
Yeah, cool. I thought BGR could have been a little
create a complete picture.
Yeah. I thought BGR could have been a little less pretentious, but
well, and it was the way that Wired wrote the title, right? That was
right.
12 cell phones that have changed our world.
Right.
All right, guys, that's not what you meant.
Yeah, yeah.
Perhaps changed our lives. Well, yeah.
Well, not but even changed the industry. I mean, but it's
yeah.
They were being a little bit over enthusiastic about the influence that the Sidekick had on the world. But
true, very true. Speaking of phones
that will change the world,
there was another little phone announcement that happened this week, which we teased last week and now we know about this week. That's the old Facebook phone.
Yeah.
It's here.
Oh, kind baby. Of. We've been talking about... How long have we been talking about the Facebook phone? Well, probably as long as we've been doing this podcast. Well, honestly, though...
Facebook a year... Mark Zuckerberg, almost a year ago, said that Facebook wasn't working on a phone.
That's right.
And I think the comment was, yeah, Facebook's not working on a phone until there's a phone. And... Because right. That was classic Apple, right? We're not working on books. Oh, what's this?
Yeah, nobody reads books anymore. And yeah, obviously, yeah.
And no one reads books anymore because they didn't have this system. And now that they have it, they will read.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is kind of true, but yeah, totally. I'll be honest. Kindle Store is better. But anyways.
Oh yeah, dude. I use Kindle for all of my phone apps, but
yeah.
The only downside is that you can't buy books in the app. That kind of drives me nuts, and that's all Apple's fault.
Well, but, you know. Yeah, which is it is what it is.
You know what? That's exactly what I was going to say.
So anyways, Facebook came out with not a phone, but a Facebook app for Android.
Yeah.
Now, which, okay, they already have an app for Android.
Say.
But the difference is that this is an, what do they call it? It's like an app launcher.
Yeah.
This essentially is called Facebook Home. Yeah, where essentially it just runs on top of Android all the time, which you can turn it off if you wanted to. But when you turn on the phone, you see this. On the lock screen, you see this. When you launch an app, that sounded really weird. When you launch an app, it launches through this Go, through Facebook Home.
Right.
I don't own an Android, which is very obvious. And so I don't fully understand what that means. So it's like it's even different than like a skin on top of Android.
Well, let me dive in for a little bit here. Cause so basically how Android works is there's a couple different levels of it. You have the chipset that works, that runs on your kind of a classical ARM architecture. It runs the Delvik virtual machine, which essentially runs an Android version of Java. That Java runs the operating system, runs the apps and everything else, and that's why everything is written in Java for Android, or not Java, but you know, Java. That's what the whole lawsuit was over. Thing is that you can run stuff a little bit closer to the chipset. There are developers, like game developers, do write little applications that actually run on the ARM architecture, and it's because when you do that and avoid the virtual machine, it allows you to process stuff faster. So like making polygons and doing calculations for high intensity graphics games, it builds a better graphics. But most people don't do that because it takes a lot of time, and every phone is different. So it's very unpredictable if it's a big investment of time and resources without necessarily a big payoff, which is the problem with the fragmentation. But on top of that, so you've got Android, you've got the stock Android, but Android happens to be an open source, thing that people can go around and play with. So companies like Samsung go in and they change Android and they add their own stuff and they add their own features. It's like the swipe to keyboard. The reason why Samsung's the only one that's got the swipe to text keyboard is because that's their program that they added on top of Android. And they've got their own little widgets that you can't get rid of, and it's kind of annoying. And they've got their own stuff. Well, Facebook basically is going in and saying, when you download this app or this skin, we're going to go in and we're going to tear out all of those other widgets and stuff that everybody else has put on there. And then we're going to just put all of our stuff in that place. And so in some ways it runs between you and Android, and it'd be like, yeah, in some ways it's just little switches of the skin. In some ways it's deeper integration, but it's deeper than an app, but it's not a completely new operating system, as it was described by.
So essentially, you start this bad boy up, and it's got photos, and it's your photo stream, or it's your stream, or your news feed, essentially. That if it's just a regular status update, it has the person's cover photo on the background. And if they've shared a picture, it shows the picture along with the description of it. And which is kind of cool, and it takes up the whole screen, and we'll kind of do this Ken Burns kind of scrolly thing back and forth via the picture. So eventually, over time, you'll see the whole thing. And then at the bottom, it's got a picture of your face, which you tap on it. You can either make a phone call, you can send a message, or you can open up the app launcher. And then when you open up the app launcher, it's got basically it has, I think it was three different things, where it's got like your quick launch apps, and then you can swipe over to get all of your apps. And there was one other one, which I don't remember what it was now. And then from there you can launch your apps like normal. One of the things that this also does, which is just a very well implemented multitasking, is the Facebook messaging is a huge piece to it, which integrates in with your text messages. So all of your contacts on your phone will use this, and it'll sync up with their Facebook accounts nicely. And basically what will happen is if someone sends you a text message or a Facebook message, their face pops up on your screen as a little circle on the side, no matter what app you're in. If you're in a game, on the home screen, whatever, it'll be there. And then when you tap on their face, it essentially will show you the message that they sent, and then you can reply right there. You don't have to leave the app. You you don't have to disrupt what you're currently doing. It just is layered right on top, multitask-like. And so that was the big thing, if I remember correctly. I'm trying to remember what else there was, if anything. Because I'm like, what else does Facebook do? And obviously you can also go to your email if you wanted to, or you can go to to the actual Facebook app and look at all of the updates and stuff. Another one is they made it super easy for you to post. Oh yeah, on that app launcher, it also has the ability to quickly add a status update, to add a photo, or to check in somewhere. And so that's just nice. Sitting right there, ready for you to go. It's got all your notifications like normal and things like that. Now they are initially partnering with a singular company. They're doing it with the HTC first.
Right.
But they do say, which is using Jelly Bean on there, but Facebook's goal is to eventually, pretty much you can use it on any Android device, and they're just slowly going to qualify those phones as they're going along.
Right.
It'll just be a free download that they'll advertise through the Facebook app. So if you're on Android and your device is compatible, you'll see a little thing, hey, download this app and check it out. I think that's essentially it. Am I forgetting anything?
I don't think you're forgetting anything.
So what do you think?
My first reaction is, if I had an Android phone, I'd totally try it out. Whatever. Facebook is it's just such a fascinating. Okay. I'm going to take this from two.
So I guess let me add one more thing I just thought of it before you get too far down is just kind of the overriding philosophy of what they're going for here. They say a lot of times your phone it revolves around apps, and that's the way that things are ordered. And their goal with this one is to really put your relationships and your friends first and have them ordered that way, which is a cool vision. I'm sure they're still building towards that and what that means, since they obviously still have an app launcher is a big part of it. But it's this idea of put your friends first and foremost to really immerse you in at least the visual aspect of Facebook is kind of how they're looking at going here.
I'll be totally honest. Like, I think if I could get... I get updates from Facebook on my friends and stuff on my news feeds. I don't get a lot, but I don't have any problem with the idea of that. And I think it's kind of a cool idea of like just constantly updated, content that's being generated by your friends. Like I don't know. There's different. I think what my first reaction to this is, I don't know. How well this is going to be received, and I'd like to play around with it, as I could totally see this to be the type of thing that I would turn on and just leave on. And I am not like a big Facebook addict by any means. It just is, I check Facebook probably, once or twice. I probably check Facebook once a day. I check it less than I check email, but I like it, and I like to be able to see what's going on, and I like Instagram, and I like Twitter, and I like Path, and I like, I like content. I like reading stuff. It's just part of my, like, going through of everything. And if Reddit made a Reddit home, I probably would try that out too. It's one of those things.
That's an interesting thing. That if did they set a trend here, where now all of a sudden there will be apps where it's like, yeah, we made an app, but we also made a launcher. I guess right. It kind of depends on how hard it was to do this. But I could see where Google's like, well, I guess they theoretically already have one. But, you know, they, yeah. You know, but they do like maybe a specific Google Plus type of thing where they're going to put those things up front or other community types things.
Right, and it's funny. That actually was my first thought on this was, wow, this is pretty awesome. Like, this is straight out of
art. Make fun, maybe.
Right. Cool. That is, you know, it's a cool idea. I actually like the
Pinterest.
Idea. Oh, yes. Man. I actually really like the idea of this type of, we're going to have a, we're going to have content flowing onto your screen. I think that this is a winning idea. The question will be, do people want, you know, Facebook is kind of in this weird position right now where, you know, I don't know, people don't seem as excited about it. There's not as much goodwill towards Facebook as it is there once was.
That's because it's confusing.
Right.
And I think there's also massive, just like we were talking about earlier with the CMA communications, I think there's some pretty big questions around privacy. Where Facebook has officially come out and said, well, we're not going to pay attention to apps and stuff. But you're like, really? You're not going to watch what apps I'm opening and what I'm using all the time and things like that? Really?
Right.
I don't know about that. You don't. They don't strike you as that kind of company. Where,
right.
Yeah, they may not today, but they're going to push the envelope, and they're going to slowly open it up on you, and they're going to learn about your – I think another one Malik, who's kind of been in a bad mood lately because he was all – he was hating on Google like 2 weeks ago, and now he's hating on Facebook. well, it was, you know, because Google killed Reader, which he uses all the time.
Yeah.
And then, like, Google announced a new product, and he's like, nope, I don't trust you. It was that notebook one or whatever it was.
Right.
But anyways, he was like, I don't think that they're going to keep it private. He's like, they're going to know where I'm at. They're going to know what photos I'm taking.
Well, the irony of this is
he went as far as to be like, Facebook's going to know if you are, if they notice for like a week that your phone stays completely still from 10 p.m. to 6 p.m. in the same exact spot, for a week, they're gonna know where you live, and they're gonna start putting these puzzles and pieces together, and they're gonna recognize when you go to, you know, these different stores a lot, and they're gonna know what stores they are, and you know, if you check in with a friend, who your local friends are, and you know, and so he was getting, okay. I think, overly paranoid on this stuff.
First off,
and you know, but I could see where he's like. Because it's Facebook, you go, yeah, they have at least thought about doing that. You know what I mean? And then said, no, we probably shouldn't because there'd be privacy concerns.
Okay. I need to interject here because this is the thing.
Do it.
They already do that. The idea that you downloaded Facebook and signed into your Android phone and gave them permissions for your locations and the rest of – and to get into your contacts, which is what the Facebook app does, is it – gets all that information. It's directly integrated into your iOS. If you have an iPhone,
on Android?
Both
they're not
phones.
Getting that information on iOS.
Yes, they are. Are you kidding me? They totally
constantly?
Give your location
on
services.
My phone, it doesn't well, give my locations
you,
all the time.
You,
it only does
turn,
it when I open the app.
Did you turn down for your? Did you sign into the iOS integrated stuff where you can like you can. Change your Facebook status from your notification center?
Yes.
Okay.
So I turned on my phone, and it's not doing location right now. So
all
how
right,
do
so
they
then,
know
okay, you're right. You're right. They can't do it if your location services aren't turned on because they didn't turn it on. But the idea
but you're
that,
saying and every
wait,
single
wait,
time
wait
I check in with my location, no matter where I am, no matter what app I'm using, they get access to that data?
I'm pretty sure they do. Well, okay, wait a second. The idea that what I'm saying is he is talking about the idea of them tracking everything constantly. And the thing is that you're not going to, the situation's not going to be any different than if you have the Facebook app for your iPhone. So if they can't track you right now, they can't track you right now. Your location services aren't on right now. If you're, and same goes with the Android version of Facebook. If the location services aren't on, they don't have any access to your location services. But if it's on, when it's on, everybody gets access to it. That's why they ask you for permissions for your location services, because it's, you know, that's what's going on. Now, what's interesting is if they don't turn it on, if you don't see the little thing pop up, that probably means nobody's accessing it right now. But it kind of is at this point. It's the only reason why they don't have access to that information is because they don't turn it on. It's not that you haven't given them permission, and it's not that they don't use that information as much as possible whenever they can. It's just one of those things where it's like, and this is no different. You're already there.
I feel like we're talking about slightly different things, but that's okay.
Well, you see, but he's freaking out about the idea that they will turn it on and constantly leave it on all the time so that they can track everything. But they already
Google does with their navigation stuff.
Exactly. But the thing is that they already can do that, and they don't. So either the expectation is they still won't, or they're already have figured out a way to get that information and use that information without, you know, figuring out what, you know, doing or without turning it on.
So I see what you're saying, and I agree with you that the fears are unfounded. I'm just saying it's Facebook. And so you instantly think the worst and then have to back off of it because that's how they tend to act.
Okay,
they
from a perspective,
they might be acting correctly on smartphones, mostly because they've gotten, they've been shown how to act, in terms of location and stuff like that. But on their website, man, they're constantly pressing the envelope on what's private and what's not, and what's shared and what isn't.
I have no expectation that they're acting right on smartphones. I think they've just gotten really good at hiding it.
Fair enough.
I think they're very devious.
Which is still a reason to be concerned, regardless of Facebook Home, I guess. Other than, like, on iOS, it's a different story, right? Because you got to have the app open because it doesn't multitask like Android does. I don't know what the Android situation is, but at least on iOS, it's different. Because they freeze stuff. They don't let apps just kind of, or they'll let them complete whatever it is that, list of seven things that can be multitasked.
there's a surprising amount of stuff that they can do in the background. Location services is an interesting one. But the classic Android malware is our apps that, if we just stick with the Android for a second, the classic Android malware are apps that track everything you do. They get access to your contacts list. You download this like stupid coin flip game and it gets access to your contacts list, your location services, all the other apps you're using, everything. I mean, it's one of those things where if Facebook's not doing that right now, which I think they're not doing as much as they could because they don't need to, they're to get the information that they want. The fact is that they could, and they, you're not giving them anything more than they already have and need. And the idea that Facebook doesn't know where you live just because you didn't put the address in there is absurd. Same with Google. I love the, it's just like, I don't know. The idea that these companies can't figure it out very quickly when a random Google, when somebody Facebook stalking you can, or not Facebook, when somebody just Google stalking you online can figure out where you live in 30 minutes, Facebook can do it automatically with their servers in five. Like, it's just, it's not even a, I don't know. It's such a weird game that everybody plays with this privacy stuff. I know we are in this unique position sometimes because we're not just okay with it. We're advocates for it. But a lot of it is because there's just no way to stop it. You can't, what are you supposed to do? You use any of these services, any of them, and they'll figure it out and then they'll share it with everybody. because up until a week ago, the Supreme Court said that, all the FBI has to do is send a stupid letter to Google and Google has to give up the information. So they sent out 30,000 of them. Why? Or 300,000, whatever ridiculous number. I think it was 300,000. 100,000, the ridiculous number was, where it's just like, well, I don't have any constitutional protection of this information that Google has. I mean, of course not. You gave it to Google. Why would you get it? It's no longer private. It's in Google. Oh, shoot. I didn't think about that, I guess. You know, and what if Google wants to protect it? Well, it's not their information, it's yours. Wait a second. You know, it's just sort of like, I don't know. To me, it's like, does it give me a cool benefit? And then, okay, they already know everything. I guess I'll just deal with it. I'll figure out a way to sleep at night. What do you think about it? What are your thoughts? You haven't told us that yet.
Yeah, so I think it looks cool. I like some of the animations. And my initial thought was, man, if I actually used Facebook regularly, I could see this as pretty useful.
But then that's what everybody's saying.
Yeah, I like it. It's better than you just having a black screen or a static background picture, I suppose, which is really kind of the big difference. But at the same time, it's like, I'd like to have a little more control of when it's on and when it's off. And with this, it's always on and always in your face. And you know, they're going to get good about showing me pictures that I find interesting, which is good, except for the fact that, you know, I've got stuff to do.
I can't
always be surfing Facebook. I like their multi-chat.
Yeah.
The way the multitasking piece with the chat bubbles. I mean, it's a little cartoony, and I think other companies will mimic it, but can make it a little more streamlined, and I think it'll go better. But I like that idea. And I think that there are other apps that could make a whole lot of sense for. You know, you think in terms of emails or calendaring events or even just, you know, whatever other types of alerts where you can add a quick action in the alert. I think all of those are good ideas where you don't actually leave the whatever it is that you're currently working on unless you choose to. I think those are cool ideas, and I think you'll see a lot of smartphones start to adopt those. I don't know what you would call them, mini apps or applets, perhaps.
I really like the idea of a. What was I going to say? I can't remember.
I don't know. But anyways, so I like it. I think a lot of people will download it. I don't look at it as a fork of Android like some people were talking about.
Yeah.
You know, no more than what's currently going on, and they seem to be doing just fine.
Right. They're not being nearly as brutal about it as the Kindle fires are. You know, where it's just like there's like no trace of Android left by the time you know they get done with it. I think
part of that is Facebook is hoping to keep Google as a friend,
right?
Because they want to get on their goggles and other stuff.
Right.
I'm not going to totally co-op them.
But at the same time, this is like a direct affront to Google Plus. Like that to me is one of the most interesting things about this, and nobody's really talking about it. But the idea that it's like,
oh, that's because it doesn't matter.
What do you mean?
I think everyone at Google knows that.
Well, yeah, but to Google, this is a big deal. I mean, Google, you know, they're all of their emphasis. If it is Google Plus is the only thing that matters. Like really, outside of Google Search and Google Plus, only two projects that matter. And really, the only reason why Google, you know, Search matters is because it pays for Google Plus, which makes Google Search better. You know, it's like one of those things where I don't know. You're basically taking like. Like you said, I think Google is going to take a cue from this and think, wow, we need to get serious about bringing your social aspects to it. Because I think that there are some clever ideas that they're putting forward. And, you know, it's like the idea of we'll put your friends first. We'll put your social first. We'll move, you know, your apps will be there, but we're going to change the priorities of your phone. I don't know. It's a clever way to look at it, and it's one of those things where, you know, Facebook's always there. Yeah, we're gonna look at Google Plus, and I think I think that, man, honestly, like The other thing that they're doing, and I really like the idea of a better messaging system. I don't know how much. I don't think there's a lot of promise in this really with this whole Facebook Home, but it kind of turns me to this idea of, you know, I wish it was possible, or I wish Apple would do like they do a unified mailbox. I wish they would do a unified messaging system where you've got texting, you've got iMessaging, you've got Facebook messaging, you've got Google, what's it called? I don't know. You got Gmail messaging. I wish you could put all those things together into a single app and you just sign into them all, and it manages like everything was a different text messaging conversation. The idea of being able to tie, and then kind of what spun me off on this, is the idea of tying your text message conversations together with your Facebook conversations, where it's the same tool, would make the Facebook chatting more useful. And I really like that because I like that functionality. I think that that's good, and I think it's something that people can really, I think we could benefit from that kind of stuff. I wish there was more integration, and that's one of the things I like about this, is it's just more integration. It's more tying it all together, and really and truly, like, that was the biggest promise of early on, especially of the Windows 8 phone, was that, like, you know, you sign into one, you know, area and all of your feeds and everything are tied together, Facebook, Twitter, and whatnot. It's like, well, it's beautiful. And a lot of people seem to like that a lot, you know, because it's all tightly integrated. So I don't know. I like what the Facebook is doing, and I think, you know, a lot of the concerns about the fragmentation issue is an interesting one, because this one isn't app fragmentation so much as it's UI fragmentation to an extraordinary degree. The argument that it was being made in one of the articles I read was the idea that, you know, you pick up an iPhone, everybody who knows how to use an iPhone knows how to use every other iPhone and iPad and everything else.
There's nothing wrong with having multiple things, because you don't tend to pick up multiple phones and iPads. You pick up yours. And so as long as you understand how yours works, I think it's okay.
Yeah, it's a good point. But, you know, I think, I don't know, it's interesting. I'm actually, I hope well for Facebook. I hope that then things go pretty for them, but we'll see.
I could tell that was hard for you. I could tell your fanboyism, man. That took a lot for you, didn't it?
To say, I hope it goes well for Facebook.
I could tell you didn't want to concede that.
I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm hesitant in that it's, you know, they don't. Mark doesn't have the flair for explaining stuff like some.
He's
like
gotten a whole lot better, though.
Yes, he's gotten tremendously better. That's true. He's hired people, but he doesn't have that that worldview of the whole. I think I always got the feeling that Steve Jobs started with the ad campaign and then everything like flowed from there. You know, and he just was so good with technology that he knew what you could say. He knew what you could get away with, and then would push his engineers to do it. But he was all about the message. Whereas this is like, I think this is a good product, and I think it's a good idea. I think it will drive other developers to imitate it in a lot of ways.
Totally.
Including Google itself. And I think it's a little too late for iOS 7, but I could definitely see a lot of these ideas being integrated in iOS 8, you know, where, you know, your different things are being updated with other content from either Twitter or Facebook or more directly, you know, or like an integrated messaging system. But I think that at the same time, they didn't hit that message out there. And I feel like, and maybe that's the fault of the media. I don't really know. You know, maybe that's just, everybody's like, Facebook phone, Facebook's on the way out. Everybody's using Instagram instead now, because all the kids think Instagram is awesome. Like, Facebook owns Instagram, you know, and that's the other thing that I've been, like, for whatever reason, that's just been the drumbeat this week, is like, kids don't use Facebook anymore. Facebook is on the outs. And you're like, yeah, they just use other Facebook products that don't have Facebook tags on them. Or they log into everything through Facebook, and then Facebook advertises through those other apps and still makes all the money. Like, I don't see what the problem here, guys. Like, they seem to be doing okay with their strategy. So I don't know. I feel like the reception was very tempered by an overall cool attitude towards Facebook, although it is a good product, and I think it's interesting. I think it's a good idea. So that's my
okay. Thing. I think we got time for one more.
Okay.
If you don't have a compelling one, I do.
Well, you can go. Mine are all right.
This was a cool one by Pando Daily called "The Best Laid Plans of Mice and Michael Dell."
Yeah, I get that inference.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It talks about that how Michael Dell started out with a plan to basically take Dell private about 2 months ago. Now you remember us talking about that, and like everyone in HP was celebrating. And he's like, "That's right, we win." Anyways, he had this plan because the stock price was way below $9 a share, and it had fallen from like $41 in 2005. And he really felt like he had to get out of the public scrutiny eye to fix it. And he offered to put in some of his own money, along with Silver Lake Management Company. And in a bid to, you know, buy it back for $24.4 billion.
A lot of money.
It is. I like it on the photo here. They have Michael Dell with Dell and then Dr. Evil up there, which is awesome. So anyways, it's a leveraged buyout, otherwise known as an LBO, if you ever see that acronym. Is the process of taking it from public to private. So what they had to do was, you know, get buy-in from the shareholders in order to do it. And basically what they were offering them was $13.65 a share, which seems like a premium over the $9. But investors were not happy at all, including one of the big investor activists, Carl Icahn, which we haven't talked much about him, but he causes problems for companies in general pretty regularly.
Yes, he does.
Yeah. So anyway, so he's one of the owners, of course, and so he like put up a big stink and said, "We'll let you buy us out as long as you take out an $8.25 billion loan and pay a one-time dividend of $9 a share."
What?
Essentially saying, you gotta pay back your shareholders, you know, $22 a share, not just the 13. Which you're like, okay, fine. So Dell decided to say, well, we'll do this like go around to see if anyone can drum up a better price. Right. Essentially trying to show him that no, this is the best that you can do. And so Icahn was like, well, you know, he was like, he threatened to sue them and to bog them down in litigation and stuff like that, which, you know, makes the $9 dividend seem fairly cheap.
Right.
So anyways, they stood their ground and, you know, and said, we're going to shop it around to see if anyone else can beat the deal. Well, it just so happens that another bidder, Blackstone, which is a private equity giant with $4 billion in revenue last year. So again, they were trying to put together 24.4, and these guys have the money. They said, we could do it.
Oh, geez.
To help things out, they got a little bit of a help here. Or I should say, to make things worse, in order to shop it around, Dell kind of had to share their books with anybody and everybody who was interested in buying.
Oh, so, man.
HP and Lenovo claimed to be interested in buying.
I just, you know, I'm just curious, you know.
We might. You never know.
No, it's like that poor dude that walks into the Bentley dealer and be like, I think about buying a Bentley. Can I get a test ride?
Yeah, exactly. So Blackstone emerged with a 14.25, so not quite a dollar more per share. And then Icahn, who he basically decided to join Blackstone. Okay.
Yeah.
So the worst part is that Blackstone's offer with Icahn didn't require Michael Dell's 16% stake in the company.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, exactly. So Dell is in this position. Michael Dell is in this position where he wants to buy his baby back and have the Cinderella story and, you know, take a big, you know, take it private and then turn it around and, you know, bring his baby back. But throughout all this process, Icahn being, I'm going to say it, the jerk that he is, has really been raising a stink. And it could go down where Dell, the company, does end up actually staying as a publicly traded company, but under the control of Blackstone instead, where he may or may not be the CEO of this company.
Oh,
so
man.
It's just very, very interesting. And they said that in the end, the people who will probably be the only winners in this entire messy deal are going to be the advisors, who so far have racked up $4 million in advisory fees.
Man, pays to have rich friends.
Yeah, so not exactly a happy ending, unless you work for HP or Lenovo, apparently,
right.
Or you're an advisor. But yeah, this whole hey, I want to take Dell private and turn it around has just turned into this what can only be described as a horrible nightmare for Michael Dell.
You know, in the reality of it is, part of the problem is that they're buying it on the cheap, and they did sort of try to, you know, my opinion of it, and early on the criticism was, wow, that's a low price. $13 a share, really? You know, and I think that they thought that they could just muscle their way in. They got as much money as they could. And who knows if it's because they couldn't get any more money or if it's because they didn't want to. I have a feeling it's a little of both. They got as much money as they easily could. And it didn't require him to make any more big compromises in order to get the extra capital. And, you know, it really would leave him in control. But the problem is you can't just, you know, just because it has your name doesn't mean that you get to buy these companies for a bad price. And it just so happened that he decided to go toe-to-toe with one of the biggest rich bullies. But this guy is great at, you know, at leveraging all the money out of situations as possible. It's like, this is who you got into bed with. You can't step in thinking that you can just jerk him around and, oh, you didn't make that extra $1 billion that you thought you were going to make? Bummer. Sorry, buddy. I'm going to go over here with my company now. Like, you know, if you're going to buy your if you sell your toy to somebody else, you can't come back to it and say, I'm going to buy my toy back. But now it's used, I'm going to pay less. So I just get to make money on it, and you don't get to keep the toy. Like, what the heck? You can't do that. I put money in this toy. You know, I don't know. Although I feel bad for Dell because I feel like he's getting – he is getting jerked around by the best in the game, or at jerking people around. At the same time, I feel like he got a little bit presumptuous about how much he had to pay to do what he wanted to do. And you know, the Piper is playing.
Well, it's kind of weird. I felt like they were like, well, let's try to take a private, and if it doesn't work, we'll just try to make it work. And it was like this unforeseen situation where another bidder came in. I don't think they saw that coming. You know, that was their bluff got called, and now they're like, oh boy, now what do we do?
Right.
But yeah, so there you go. We'll be watching it, of course, and we'll find out. It sounds like the things will be quickly coming to a decision shortly.
Right.
But there's your review of Dell. Yeah.
It's interesting.
That's it.
Cool.
So, That's tech for the week.
Cool. It was a good week. It's like that was interesting. Cool. Me too.
Yeah. Next week should be good. I'm actually traveling, so I'll try to pay attention.
You are?
As much as I can.
Well, and then you'll have a show.
I'm going to stay within the U.S. It's nothing exotic.
Oh, okay. And then you'll have to do the show all on your own the week after that. So get excited.
Yeah, that's right. I already got my sub lined up.
Oh, baby. Nice.
See, I'm not a procrastinator, man. I'm on top of things.
Neither am I. Kind of.
Oh. Yeah. I love it. Awesome. Well, cool, everybody. Thank you for joining us. We really do appreciate it. My name is James Furlow, and my totally, completely, never procrastinating and always prepared brother is Matthew Furlow. So we will talk next time.